Welcome, welcome, welcome. Bienvenidos y bienvenidas to another edition of Benzinga Cannabis Insider. We do have co-host Elliot Lane in the backstage. I don't know why he's hanging out there just as if we didn't have a live show to host. Mr. Elliot Lane, national man of mystery.
That's me.
The American action figure. Oh, see how you don't love it? The American action figure.
That's good. Well done, Javi.
Mr. Pavarotti from the American East.
Ooh, my man. Oh, you are good at this. I thought I was good at flattering you, but I think you just kicked my booty on it. Oh, man. Dude, I'm sorry about this, y'all. I'm hopping in late because my internet just crashed. So if you see my camera a little shaky here, and it's not you being drunk. It's just me. But Javi,
it's high. People get high for this show. They don't get
you know
drunk.
What? Fair enough. That was silly. That was very silly. Dude, what's
is
up? What you been up to?
I want to see your new house.
No, no. This is not my new house. I am a vacation, kind of vacationing. I'm workcationing, as it goes. I'm working on the beach. But wow. Alas, it's just a prettier sight, my friend. But you know what? We have a couple guests today. My dog says hi, by the way. But I want to hear from you. What's going on in cannabis?
Yes, sir. First off, a little bit of self-referential news, if you will. Benzinga has partnered joint forces with Women Grow, the largest professional network in cannabis that connects and empowers women and industry leaders. And through our new partnership, we will be highlighting women-owned businesses at the upcoming Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference, which will take place on September 13 and 14 at the Palmer House Hotel in Chicago, Illinois. Visit bzcannabis.com for more information about this. If you own or run a woman-owned business, and by this I mean self-identified women, so, you know, apply as you feel.
Yeah.
As you deem fit, we'll be waiving partnership fees for four companies, and we'll be giving several other companies free exhibit space at our conference, which I don't know if I can say this or not, but it's not particularly cheap, right? Because it's a very high level conference. It's a good investment, but a lot of people can't afford it. I mean, honestly, if it was my company trying to sponsor this, I don't know if it would fit my marketing budget.
Yeah, fortunately, man. This is a very high level budget, and it's meant to be that way, right? It's on purpose. It's meant to be the decision makers in this industry networking together, the investors that are active and want to dive in on the institutional side. It's meant to showcase the highest level service providers, and it's meant to showcase celebrities and politicians as well. We want every decision maker in this industry there, and we achieve it. But that being said, this industry needs support, and those that have had success, no matter what side you're on, even the event side, we need to give back. So that's where this partnership with Women Grow comes in handy, or comes in terms of our strategy, in terms of showcasing these companies. And we're going to be announcing another one as well to help us do the same. And if you want to partner with us, reach out, ElliotLane@Benzinga.com. We want to work with everybody and anybody. You may think we're arch rivals to MJ Biz. They're some of our best partners. So we love everybody. But Javi, great, great shout out, man. Thank you for bringing that up.
Some other good news out of Minnesota, where cannabis edibles will finally be available starting August 1st, 2022. People can already go to pharmacists, you know, medical cannabis dispensary pharmacists, and get pre-approved for receiving their cannabis products edibles starting August 1st. On the
That's awesome.
Flip side, also in politics, a House committee rejected a bipartisan spending bill amendment that would have advanced veteran access to medical marijuana.
What happened here, Javi? What happened, dude?
I don't even know, but this is separate, right? Remember in our last show, we were discussing with Representative Mast some parts of the National Defense Authorization
yes.
Act.
Yeah.
This is separate, right? There are a lot of projects out there looking to advance veterans' access to medical cannabis, and really looking to allow VA doctors to prescribe medical cannabis without fear of reprisal, and veterans themselves medicate with cannabis should they need it and decide it's the right option for them without fearing, without fear of losing their benefits as it relates to federal benefits, right? And actually, over the weekend, President Biden was asked, dude, are you gonna live up to this promise, right, of freeing nonviolent cannabis offenders? And he said, we're working on it, which,
I don't
think anyone should be in prison for the use of marijuana, he said. And it's like, well, if you don't think they should, maybe you can do something about it. It doesn't take much, right?
But that being said, and he started it, right? I mean, we covered the first 78. Has there been much movement since? I haven't heard of any.
No.
Yeah. But regardless, I'm with you. He needs to do more. What else? What else? We got a couple interviews today, but I think we got a few more news items in us. What do you think?
Yeah, I have two pretty short ones. One is Canopy Growth. CGC on the New York Stock Exchange is reducing its debt by over $200 million. They closed an exchange transaction of certain 4.25% unsecured notes due in 2023. The idea is, the CFO at Canopy, Judy Hong, said, as we navigate global economic and capital market headwinds, this action has enabled us to deleverage our balance sheet, preserve cash, and reduce interest payments by addressing a substantial portion of our 4.25% unsecured notes.
This is huge, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I know people were, they were looking at the rise of CGC and thinking this is all legislatively based. I think this is very massive because I think retail investors on the sector agnostic level, and if you guys are in the chat and you are sector agnostic retail investors, pipe in. I mean, this is the big issue, right? It's debt. It's inflexible debt for the major cannabis companies, and Canopy Growth just got more flexible in a massive way, in my opinion.
Indeed. A couple of shout outs, and I think we should probably move over to our interview since we have two today and they're super, super interesting. The first one is a shout out to a psychedelics company, Bienstar Wellness, operating in Brazil. They started treating patients with psychedelic assisted therapy in Brazil. They're doing especially ibogaine treatments for addiction. Very, very cool company. And they also closed the acquisition of BRC, Saúde Mental y Terapias Asistidas, which basically is BRC mental health and assisted therapies, gaining access to the largest market in Latin America with a population of 215 million people. They're also working with Dr. Rasmussen, who has 27 years of experience and has treated more than 2,500 patients with psychedelic substances. Super, super interesting thing to keep an eye on, ibogaine treatment. Ibogaine is made of iboga, which is an African plant. Very innovative treatment, somewhat available in the U.S., but not as heavily regulated as it is in Brazil. So now people can travel to Brazil and get this therapy in a hospital setting, which to me is super interesting. And I've looked at some studies, right? And one of the things that these studies suggest is that people take one session of this therapy and then can remain sober for an entire year without relapse.
Wow.
Which
an entire year? That's crazy. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. I really hope we can continue moving forward in the psychedelics research and development here. And honestly, props to AOC for putting that amendment through or making that amendment happen on her side. I think that was a big step forward. Mm-hmm. Anyways, and will it be immediate? Yeah. No. But it is something that needed to happen.
Oh, yeah. No, it takes time. Policy takes time, but it'll happen. And I like that. Two big shout outs or two, little plugs before we get into the interviews. go to benzinga.com/cannabis. Check out our conversation with Jason Silva of Mind Games at Nat Geo. He talks about the awe-inspiring world of Cyberdelia or Cyberdelia. What he's doing there is super, super cool, making videos using AI and just super interesting, innovative, different. Benzinga.com/cannabis. And then check out our list of 5 Latinos to watch in the cannabis space. You can meet all of them at the Benzinga Cannabis Capital Conference in Chicago. Check out why we think these 5
are you
Latinos
on that list?
Are noteworthy. No, man, come on. That would be incestuous. It's like, yeah, you know who I love? Myself.
Oh, my God, Javi. I'm cutting that exact line, and it's going to be completely out of context, and that is going to be my ringtone. I love that. Awesome. Javier, we got 2 amazing interviews today. We're going to start with an amazing Arizona wealth of knowledge with Sarah Gullickson, CEO and founder of the Cannabis Business Advisors. With that being said, Aaron, let's dive in, my friend. Here we are. Sarah, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
We're great. Welcome into Benzinga's Cannabis Insider. You have the amazing Javier Hase, host of everything here, and then me. But Sarah, we're here to talk about you. We want to hear all about you. Tell us about your journey to cannabis.
All right. Well, I'll give you the quick and dirty version because it's long. So I've been in the industry, I think it's 13 years now. I basically started in the industry helping people get their licenses. So in the beginning, that meant putting together policies and procedures to put together and, you know, obviously submit to the government to see if you were lucky enough in, at the time, Arizona, to win one of the lottery balls. And then obviously we know we evolved and we turned into, you know, merit-based processes. And then we got really heavy into helping legislators put together their rules and regulations. And then obviously serving up the appropriate entrepreneurs that had, you know, the merit-based credentials. And then now the industry's flipped again and we're like entering into lottery territory again. So I can, you know, I can tell you I've seen it all. I can tell you I've maybe done it all. In addition to selling my first consulting firm in 2018, I've also been able to secure licenses for myself. So I hold dispensary, cultivation, and or processing license across the United States. I took a little hiatus after I had a non-compete for a little while, and then we launched the Cannabis Business Advisors in March 2020, which if anyone remembers, that was like the beginning of the pandemic. But we haven't let it, you know, slow us down. So we're still working on a lot of application processes. We're working on acquiring licenses by way of acquisition. And then we're also helping operators open their facilities across the United States. So I took a little hiatus and I was like, hey, do I still love this? And I do. So I'm still here. I'm still, you know, excited to be a part of the industry. And, you know, I love your facts about Women Grow. At one point I had the Women Grow chapter of Phoenix, and then you were giving some facts about Minnesota, and that's where I was born and raised. So yeah, I mean, cannabis has taken me a lot of places all over the globe. So thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. And honestly, you know, one would think, you know, starting a consulting business in March of 2020 could have been bad timing, but a lot of people like took advantage of that downtime to plan ahead, actually, right? To think of businesses, to really, you know, put their minds to something productive, right? Have you experienced this? And are you seeing now a lot of this finally materialize, or what was the situation there?
You know, listen, like, I'm a big believer in, like, I don't let the fact that I'm a woman get me down. I don't let the fact that, you know, I'm younger than some people in the industry get me down. I think any opportunity is what you make it. So we were served with a startup in the middle of a pandemic. And some of the things that were like carved off our top line were travel, right? So before we were spending $10,000, $20,000 a month in travel, totally. Conferences,
yeah.
Media.
I can't even tell you how much I've saved in the last couple of years.
Exactly. And now it's been really cool because like we always used to meet our clients in person. And I miss that a little bit. But people are so used to doing business by Zoom. So any of the like legislative processes that halted because they couldn't collect ballots and things like that, I really felt like it balanced it out. 2020 was, you know, not a great year for revenue, but we were profitable. And 2021, we were profitable as well. You know, and we've just been, you know, trucking along and, you know, really taking that time, like you said, to, you know, try and create different products and different services that we can offer. And, you know, I think that being an entrepreneur, especially in the cannabis spaces, you have to be fluid. So if you're not, you're not going to last.
Can you talk a little bit about where you play the most? I mean, what markets have been good to you since you started this business?
You know, back in the day, like tried and true merit-based processes were our favorite. So, you know, Illinois, when Illinois legalized the first time around, before it went to social equity, it was like a true merit-based product process. We had an apartment there, we had an office there, and we really pounded the pavement there. That was back in the day when I used to take like 40 meetings a week because we were still in the education phase of cannabis, where it's like, hey, hedge fund guy, here's the quick and dirty of cannabis. And like, are you willing to risk all your assets to get into it? And that's what people thought back then, right? So it was like heavier lifting, you know, and now, you know, people are wanting to get into the industry. So it was like, back then it was like a matter of like kind of convincing people to get into the industry. And then like, that's obviously, you know, we're well past that tipping point. Pennsylvania's, you know, a state that's been near and dear to my heart. I really liked how they ran their programming. We had amazing people that we were able to secure licenses for. One of my favorite groups was able to get their, you know, facilities up and running and then flip it over to one of the, you know, good MSOs. And so we were able to really turn a profit for, you know, that client. Hawaii was fun because we got to go to Maui all the time.
Nice. You came back.
I'm crazy enough. I've been offered to move to Chicago, New York, Boston, and I love Arizona. So this has always been my home base, even though I've had offices all over the country at certain points.
What's up with the Arizona market, right? I was going to ask you about the Pennsylvania market because our next guest is based in Pennsylvania, but you just touched on that. What about the Arizona market? I honestly, it's hard to grasp for people outside of Arizona, but people operating in Arizona love it, which is not the case usually. You talk with people operating in most US markets and they're complaining about everything. People in Arizona are like, it's a fantastic opportunity. I love it. So what's up with that? Is it real or are there a lot of hurdles still?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of hurdles in cannabis, no matter which way you do it. I love Arizona because it's my home state. I love the fact that the licenses are vertically integrated, which obviously makes them a high value license in comparison to like, you know, Florida and New York. And as we know, a lot of the different markets have separated their licensing. So you either get a dispensary processing or, you know, cultivation. It's a really old program. So it's obviously been updated, you know, in the last 5 years. We're limited licenses, which means that there's some sort of like a monopoly situation. We now have adult use. So the market's a very, very healthy market. You know, I think there's this misconception that the MSOs run our market and they don't. We have a lot of private operators that either have one or two facilities that are just here in Arizona. So I love that because like some of my favorite dispensaries, you know, are people that are from here and their family ran and they produce high quality medicine for patients and then obviously have, you know, products for adult use as well. Some of my least favorite things about Arizona is it's a lottery, right? So, you know, I think a lot of people like that because they think the barrier to entry is lower, but then there's the question of like, did the best people get the license in the sense that like, if you just leave that to dumb luck, you know, what does that look like? So I know a lot of the people that got the first wave of licenses, you know, back in 2010, you know, some of them didn't really, I mean, I don't think any of us knew what these businesses would take. I mean, now if you ask mm-hmm. what it takes to stand up a dispensary cultivation and processing center, you know, if you're building out large facilities, you're at 15, 20 million. So, yeah. You know, I think a lot of the operators didn't know maybe what they were getting into. And I think a lot of the operators were more worried about like padding their pockets versus like, you know, moving the industry forward. So Arizona's, I love Arizona, but I also hate Arizona.
Does it, you know, when I think about companies in Arizona, my mind goes to like a Mint dispensary, yep. You know.
And they're local guys. I know them. They're awesome. They're doing great numbers and they're doing like a new concept, right? Which I love to see creativity in the industry because our industry just lacks it because of the regulations.
Yeah. And also there was I spoke to the Mint guys, I feel like, recently about
You
something
did.
to do with like actual culinary. I think they have something to do with culinary with their dispensary. Do you see that more? Yeah, thank you. It's like I cannot remember what it is. But is that moving forward? I feel like they ran into a licensing issue or some sort of regulatory issue there.
You know, I don't know exactly how that was passed. I don't think that there's another facility that's been able to get a similar type concept like that passed. Not that it's like, you know, operating outside of the regulations, because it's not. But it is a super cool concept where you can like order food, and then like a lot of the sauces and things like that are infused. I don't know that the department will let other people do that, but that's obviously
Doesn't
TBD.
seem like it.
No.
I got one question to close it up. But first off, actually, you reminded me today, Copper State Farms announced they had a new CEO of Five Symington. Copper State Farms, based in Arizona as well. So big shout out to Copper State and Five, wishing you much success. Moving on, to close it up, unfortunately, you are running out of time here. But, considering a little bit about the current landscape, recent news, what's going on, what should investors consider when looking at the opportunities and trends and where they can fit in this market?
Right. And I think that that's like really, you first have to start with like, how much money do you want to dedicate to the industry, right? If you want to dedicate $5, you know, buy some stock.
No, a lot.
If
There are always a lot.
you right. If you want to invest a couple hundred thousand dollars, then you can apply in states like New Jersey and New York. And, you know, that could basically get you through the licensing process. If you want to dedicate a couple hundred million, you know, there might be some opportunities coming up in some of the states that have vertical licenses. And those are going to take that much money to compete with the people that are already playing there. You know, Florida specifically, if they give away more licenses, you get unlimited dispensaries. So, you know, your budget obviously has to be pretty steep. So we're working super heavily in New York. New Mexico is a great opportunity if you're not like too late to the game, but they've been doing some really impressive numbers from a recreational standpoint. And then they have unlimited licenses too. So the barrier to entry is somewhat lower. So you have New York, New Mexico, New Jersey, Virginia's coming up, Alabama's coming up. Those are going to be more merit-based application processes. We're working with some clients in Alabama. We actually have a like deck that outlines all the opportunities that'll be available over the next, you know, 12 to 18 months. And a lot of our investors buy that so that they can really synthesize that and understand where to go, where they have residency requirements met or social equity, you know, connections met. And then that's basically how we help people get into the industry.
Yeah,
I'm not like
I
an
like
advocate.
that. That is a classic Sarah Gullickson thing, right? Like the guides. It's like, okay, you can get the full advisory, or here's a summary of everything you need.
You know,
You
back in the day, I
know when
couldn't
enough
duplicate
licensing this
myself.
a few years ago, I
Back
remember.
in the day, I was like, how do I duplicate myself? So I was like, queen of webinars, queen of white papers, and I was just trying to get the information out to the masses, you know, to get some good peeps in the industry. And I think I did a decent job.
I love that. That's awesome, Sarah. Well, you know what? I want to have a follow-up conversation on Illinois, since it seems like you've watched it from the beginning. So we'll have Sarah back on, but I'm sorry we have to cut it short
No
here. But it's been
worries.
a pleasure, Sarah. Thank you
It was
so
fun.
much for spending some time with us here.
All right. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Javi, that was awesome. That was a lot of fun talking about Arizona, but also I didn't
Sure.
realize like her depth in the industry, but I think you did. It sounds like you've seen her reports for a while.
Man, you got there's not a lot of female leaders in the industry, unfortunately. So I don't know. It's always
Well, we're looking to
important.
change that.
I've done exactly on where women, minorities in general are doing in this industry, and really shine a light on that, right? It's not only the large MSOs with massive marketing budgets that should get the media's attention, and it's certainly not how things are at. So we've been
Amen to
following
that, my
that, but
friend.
we've also been following our next guest, have we
Always.
not?
Always, always. Javi, let's bring him in, man. Let's give him the good old Javier Hasse introduction.
Yes, sir. Let's first roll the credits.
There
Mr. Nick.
he is.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Welcome in. We got Jim Misch, CEO of 22nd Century Group. This is your first time joining us, I think, right?
It is my first time, and that's a tough act to follow. Sarah was incredible, so that's a tough act to follow. I'll do my best here.
Far too short, but I don't think we're going to be too competitive in terms of the knowledge we're after today. I think you all do something very, very different. So can you fill us in a little bit, Jim? What do you do in cannabis, man? Or around it, we should say.
Sure. So 22nd Century at its core is really a plant-based biotechnology company. We focus really on three specific plants: tobacco, cannabis, hemp, and hops. And we do that because they're all from the same family of plants, and they're very challenging to modulate, to stabilize. And that's really our value proposition, the ability to enhance and modify the plant on a non-GMO basis to improve things like yields and cannabinoid content, et cetera. That's the core of our business. But what we've built out, we believe, is a unique asset on a global basis. And that is, we want to fit into the value chain in the very front part, starting from how these ingredients work, receptor science, really taking a leading edge of being able to explain to our customers and consumers, you know, how do these products work through receptor science? And we do that out of our Rochester, New York facilities. And then we've locked down what I believe is the top shelf ability to gene edit the plant on a non-GMO basis to, again, improve yields, improve disease resistance, but most importantly, dramatically and disruptively increase the cannabinoid content in one fashion or another. And we can talk more about that. But then we go further into breeding to make sure that the plant strains are stable. We can grow them on a large basis, either in greenhouses or in large farms around the world. And finally, we've just recently made an acquisition in May of GVB Biopharma out of Oregon and Las Vegas to put us into the world's leading supplier of CBD and other cannabinoids. Now we are number one with just under 20% of the market share, but also have become a really world-class CDMO with the ability to formulate and improve the formulations of anything from tinctures, the gummies, et cetera. So we wanted to play in that value chain everywhere from receptor science to white labeling CDMO. We've built that out over the last 2 years, and now our disruptive plant strains are starting to come onto the market. We can license those or take it all the way through a kind of an a la carte basis for our customers to help them build really a better product. So we're not a branded company, much like the Intel Inside or BASF. We make the products better. And that's how we fit in into the value chain and our ability to modulate these plants in a roughly a 2 year cycle is really what's gaining more and more attention in the global market.
I don't want to ambush you with a scientist question, but I'm very curious as to gene editing versus breeding, right? You're doing a little bit of both. How do they interact? How do they intertwine? And are you leaning toward either one of them? Is it a combination of both that results in better plants and more cannabinoid content, maybe in specific terpenes, or depending on how you're tailoring these plants, right? But can you tell us a little bit about the dynamic between these two? One of them, the breeding being the super traditional old school practice, agricultural practice that we've been seeing in the world for 5,000 years, and gene editing, which is like at the forefront of technology.
Yeah, it's a great question. And there's a difference in how we view it between crossbreeding and breeding, right? So we start with a combination of understanding the biosynthetic approach in the plant. So we have intellectual property to understand the most efficient biosynthetic pathways to gene edit to modulate these plants. And that's where it really all starts. Then through that process, we actually gene edit the plant, but we pay very close attention to the GMO policies, and we do it on a non-GMO basis. Part of that at times is via very laser-focused crossbreeding at the small scale. Ultimately, what you end up with are clones or a small amount of seeds that take you in the right direction. But now you have to breed it. In our vernacular, breeding is just scaling it up into the ability to grow it in large quantities, either in very controlled greenhouses or, in the best case, out in farms around the world because the plants have been optimized. So it's a combination of everything. We use crossbreeding, the traditional crossbreeding, very sparingly in the early stages. But to take these clones, these seeds, and go from, you know, a handful of them or so to hectacres that are very consistent, both in their consistency and their disease resistance and drought resistance and their yield, is what we focus in on breeding. We actually do a lot of that with partnerships around the world, including in the U.S., in Canada, and most recently in Tasmania, of all places. As it turns out, one of the key breeders of alkaloids and cannabis and hemp is in Tasmania, and very, very close friends.
Wow. I did not expect that to be a part of this conversation.
Well, we view that as a, you know, as an issue developing in the market, which is as you scale up, that the plants have never been optimized and stabilized. And that's really our role in this, is to be able to bring large quantities, but a very high quality, very high consistency, and quite frankly, a lower cost, because the expression of cannabinoids go up much higher than they are in today's strains.
Now, I have two questions for you. First being, you said non-GMO quite a few times in that initial presentation. I think we all probably understand why it's important to be non-GMO. Maybe my assumption could be incorrect. I'd love to hear about that. But also, is it an issue in cannabis for these plants to be utilized with GMOs?
In the U.S., not so much, but on a global basis, especially in Europe, they take a different view. It really is a legal, you know, legal issue more than anything else. So we pay attention to is our procedures and our processes in how we're doing this to make sure that it reflects and meets all of the global definitions of GMO or non-GMO, in our case, non-GMO. Mm-hmm. So I think in the, you know, as the market unfolds, it may become less and less of an issue. But if you want to really do large business in the European theater with new strains, you've better have a non-GMO approach to it, which is how we do it. As it turns out, it's much more efficient, we believe, than the old GMO standards, and we can move quickly, and that's what helps us keep on this 2-year cycle of time.
Now, second question here for me is, you say you work across alcohol, cannabis, hemp, as well as tobacco. I guess you can answer this from a revenue standpoint. You can answer this from a scientific standpoint. But which plant have you seen the most success in as a company?
Yeah, they're all in different stages. So what we do in tobacco, for example, is we have a very low nicotine level tobacco. It's 95% less nicotine than a standard tobacco plant. And we have actually brought that forward through FDA authorizations, two of them, to be able to launch a low nicotine non-addictive cigarette into the market, which we just did over the past 2 months in a pilot basis in Chicago, Illinois, with the brand VLN. And that VLN has been documented by the FDA clinical trials to help you smoke less. It's a harm reduction product. To help break the addiction of the combustion and nicotine of regular cigarettes. So that's our major play. And that's the foundation of the company that's, you know, 15 years in the making. In cannabis, the company jumped into the cannabis market in this regard about 3 years ago. So all the what I've just described has been transformed over the past 3 years. But now we're offering these new strains, but we also cultivate hemp in the U.S. We cultivate marijuana around the world. We can offer it as biomass, we can offer it as isolates or distillates, or we can license the technology out to others. And then right behind that is we have disruptive hop strains, much higher levels of haploids that are now shown to be efficacious in things like anti-inflammation and gut health, also can modulate the flavor profiles as well. And they're about a year behind. They're coming through this breeding process now as we speak. And we'll be entering into the revenue stream on that probably by the end of this year. So to answer your question on a revenue basis, up until very recently, our tobacco business was our largest revenue generator. That has now been overtaken with the acquisition of GVB. But our cigarette brand is very quickly picking up a revenue stream. And I expect that to overtake cannabis hemp at some point in the not too distant future. But we're focused on all three business units or franchises, we call them. And over time, you know, we believe things will equal out of the three business units on a revenue and profit basis.
Now, you know, you could call it hedging, of course, but at the same time, you're doing tobacco or, you know, nicotine in general, but like tobacco, and you're doing hemp, which many pose as an alternative to tobacco, as a great smoking cessation, or at least nicotine cessation mechanism, right? How is it not shooting yourself in the foot, right? To bet on both, right? Yeah, how do you balance them out? And ultimately, how does it benefit you to have both business units in a world where at the same time, we do see a clear trend toward lower nicotine products, no nicotine products, smoking cessation in general?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to be, it's a great question. You have to be true to the mission in that category, which is harm reduction. You know, we would like to sell the last cigarette on the planet and move everyone off of combustible cigarettes, right? That's our tobacco mission statement and the foundation of the company. That goes hand in hand with opportunities on the hemp cannabis side as well. They can work together synergistically. Ultimately, there will be opportunities to do that on a business basis. We see that in the not too distant future as well. So if you stay true to that mission, they don't really compete with each other. They're really synergistic with each other. If you're really not tuned into that mission, then yeah, it could be a cannibalization one way or the other. But we believe they're synergistic. They're both heading in that same, you know, that same basis or that same trajectory. And ultimately, they can come together to, you know, to help each other out. There's a lot of evidence around CBD and other cannabinoids with the breaking the nicotine addiction. This particular product kind of does it because it's not the nicotine's not completely out of the tobacco. There's just enough in there to, in essence, coat the receptors and trick the mind into thinking it's getting a full hit. But as you continue this smoking habit, that starts to separate you from the nicotine addiction. And if we can start to, you know, synergistically bring hemp and cannabis into that same platform to drive that mission of harm reduction, then we're certainly going to do that.
Wow. So kind of one final question for me is, you know, there's been a couple things I'm going to reference here. One, the issue with Juul and everything that's gone down there. And two, in Australia, the vast majority of the public would prefer cannabis to cigarettes. And they want higher crime, you know, punishments for those who offer juvenile cigarettes. I'm curious. I mean, those are both issues, right? You know, and really, I think it's centralized around, you know, cigarette nicotine use by minors. So, you know, in terms of what you're offering, are there ways to counteract that with the technology? AKA, for me, I'm more so getting, you know, is there a product like a vape product that you all would bring to the market to counteract some of that, you know, bad marketing to these juveniles and or, you know, issues we see with the younger generations?
Yeah, we're not a branded company, so we would not bring the vape product itself to the market. But, you know, we would support those who are, you know, on this same mission by bringing higher quality, lower cost ingredients, formulation capabilities to bear to put out a product that you know could fit your description. I think at the end of the day, there's going to be, it's a portfolio approach or a toolbox. In any country, you need alternatives that would include vapes. You need technologies that include other vehicles to address the issue, and you do need combustibles because the market is still large in that area. And migrating, giving people an off ramp, as we say, from a combustible is necessary at the same time to help the cause. So we view, you know, having all those tools in the marketplace is very important. And our primary goal, with the exception of the brand that we launched to demonstrate consumer uptake and demonstrate the technology, we want to stand behind a brand and experts in the brand and help make their products better and more effective in the marketplace. And that could be a vape company, that could be, you know, many other types of company in the cannabis hemp area. And that's where we would supply biomass, we could supply the isolates or the distillates itself. And what we've become very good at is helping on the formulation basis. You know, the cannabinoids themselves are not very bioavailable in any form. And there are ways to formulate with existing excipients out there to make those, whether it's CBD or THC or other rare cannabinoids, much more efficacious in tinctures and gummies and even in a flower basis. So that's our, you know, that's our approach. And that's where we want to strategically partner with all types of companies around the world, everywhere from ethical pharmaceutical houses to consumer products across nutrition and beverage and food and medicinal, recreational. We have the technology and the know-how of the upfront value chain to work with any and all of them to make their products that much more attractive to the consumer and encourage repurchase. And that's where we want to fit in.
Fantastic. Yeah, real fast. I know we're 11 minutes over time, but real fast, a question from the chat. It's a yes, no, let's not get too much into it. But Lord Byron wants to know if you can modify a hemp plant to produce high yields of alternative cannabinoids like Delta 8 or HHC. And if so, you know, where can they reach you?
Yeah, we can do that. And it's 22ndCenturyGroup.com or XXII. They can reach out. We can modulate this plant at will. And to give you an example of that, you know, our new strains coming out of our Rotterdam facility, now moving into breeding in Tasmania on the marijuana side or the recreational medicinal side, are somewhere around 50% THC and ultra high levels of CBD and CBN and CBG as well. So we view that as disruptive from a variety of ways. And we can do the same thing on hemp and do the same thing on rare cannabinoids, including Delta 8, which we're currently putting through the system as we speak.
You know, I kind of want you to get into Delta 8. I'm not going to lie, Jim. Just there's so much bad Delta 8 products, so many bad Delta 8 products out there that I'm almost like, Jim, take over, dude.
Yeah, that's
get us to a new place here, man.
Key focus area for us. And we've got plant strains that are moving into what I call the breeding area, you know, the scale up, in order to dramatically improve those yields and to be able to grow those plants, you know, outside in hectares very consistently and very cost effectively. And that's definitely within our pipeline coming out of the back end here shortly.
Awesome. Jim Misch, CEO of 22nd Century Group, NASDAQ XXII. Sorry, Javi, if I cut you off there, but Jim, thrilled to have you here, my friend. Really appreciate the knowledge you've just imparted on us. Please keep us updated on your news. We'll bring you up after earnings. Yeah. We'll bring you up after a big update. We'd love to have you back on, my friend.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it, and I'll come back on anytime.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you. Be well. Awesome, Javi. What a great interview. Two great interviews in respect to Sarah. I thought she provided some awesome knowledge.
I don't even care.
It is what it is. No, no, we don't run up into any other shows right now that I'm aware of, but honestly, Javi, always a pleasure, my friend. With that being said, my standard plugs, benzinga.com/cannabis, 40 plus articles a day from Javi and his team of writers. BZCannabis.com, we will have politicians, celebrities, every, this is a new update, every single major MSO, every single one of them will be at our cannabis event, every one of them, as completed yesterday. So every single one of them, this is going to be another who's who of cannabis. Chicago, September 13th and 14th, bzcannabis.com. With that, Javi, my Argentinian action figure, since you took my thunder earlier, always a pleasure. And thanks to producer AT, as always.